Hey guys, Anthony Fury here. Welcome to the TPL Roundtable. Sitting here with my friends Paul Micucci and Mike Wixon. How's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks, good. Anthony.
Yeah. Good to be hanging out with you today and talking about the conversation that, well, everyone's talking about right now, the tragic assassination of Charlie Kirk last week has migrated into, well, many other conversations. And now we've gotten to the firing of Jimmy Kimmel for reasons that, well, it is how you want to frame it. If you ask different people what happened, they're going to say different things. And kind of brings us to an interesting conversation about where the culture is headed. So we've got people saying getting rid of Kimmel, and other people being let go of their jobs or shows or whatnot is cancel culture. Others saying, no, it's not cancel culture. It's just consequences for your actions, private sector thing doing its thing. But then other people turning around and saying, well, yeah, it is reverse cancel culture. And that's what we need because we're sick of the left canceling us. So it's time to get a bit of that sweet revenge to balance them out or what have you. And then the question of, is this going to lead to more atomization, more division, coarseness of our culture? And Paul, we were talking about before filming the differences between American culture and Canadian culture. So what it all means here. So let's get into it. The hot topic really of the week. Culturally, where are we going with this, Mike?
Well, I got a little worried, right? I mean, certainly the shock that we all felt over the Charlie Kirk thing, whether you liked him or hated him. And boy, social media has done a whirlwind on that from both sides, and some horrible stuff's being said. And of course, on the other side, some martyr canonizing and martyrdom being applied. But what I was worried about the most, and maybe you were in the same boat, was how is America going to react? And will this become a more polarizing moment? Will this draw people apart from one another at a time that's not a good idea right now? And so far, it seems to be keeping to social media and the media. And I'm a little relieved. I thought it would be a little more drastic than that.
But everyone's talking about it at the water cooler, at the kitchen table. So how are they talking about it in a like observer way? Or are people split over this? Is this like, you know, family and friends being angrily divided, do you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I was driving in and I'm listening to another podcast, and the podcast is actually doing the text messages between the shooter and his lover. And basically, that's the podcast. They're actually reading minute by minute, and they're so suspicious of this thing that they're actually dissecting the words. So, they used the word vehicle. Oh, they used the word. And they're actually using that as you know, why this is probably a conspiracy and why. So it's crazy how this is, you know, become the new Kennedy or the, you know, Jimmy Hoffa. You know, it's one of those ones where they're actually looking at it and they're saying, you know, there's something behind this and it's dividing all these people. So not only is it, you know, whether you like, you know, Charlie Kirk or dislike Charlie Kirk, that's another discussion for another podcast. Because everyone has a different view, it looks like, on that for the most part.
I heard in the studio that day several people say, okay, this was an op. And I was like, oh, this was a planned conspiracy.
How suspicious are we? And, you know, this is why I think, and the great thing about what we're doing in the podcasting world right now, and I know it gets criticism, but this is why the conversation needs to take place, because people, what we're uncovering is that people do not believe what they're being fed through media. So, you know,
can you blame them?
No, you can't blame them. But, you know, as soon as it comes out, you know, well, you know, good question. I coming in, you know, I'm listening and they're saying, you know, well, it took them, I forget how many hours, this is a long time, to find the gun. And in the text messages, the guy is actually standing in the parking lot, the shooter, which I don't want to acknowledge his name because I hate to do that.
So he was texting the person after he did the shooting.
After he did the shooting. And he's saying, I'm still here because I'm waiting for them to leave to go get my gun. And so he's at the point where there's only one person left after the whole thing takes place. And he's still trying to get over and get his gun that he dropped when he left the shooting. But, you know, and we can get into all those details, which I don't want to do today, but you know, it just shows the level of suspicion and divide that even the facts are causing. And then, you know, Anthony, you started off with Jimmy Kimmel, you know, is that just being, you know, is that taking advantage, unfortunately, of a bad situation? I don't know. You know, it sure looked to me. It, you know, of course, there's a teleprompter. He's reading it. It's scripted, you know, as we had talked about. But it kind of, you know, it does look like that was planned. It was.
You raise a good point. There was a staff around him.
A writer's room.
The writers put that in the machine. The teleprompter came on. He was well aware of what he was doing.
20 of them were well aware. It was very well planned.
Is there a producer somewhere in the house?
There was.
Yeah.
There's a.
Yeah. That reports to like an executive in charge of production that's assigned by ABC to the show.
And then right down to a floor producer right there in front of Jimmy pointing the camera that he's speaking to. So a wide number of people, a large number of people knew about this. And that has been the MO of his show for some time. He seems to be victorious only on his show when he does something that is glorious in the name of a virtue of his own, or, you know, the woke culture. And that's been sort of where that show has been headed. I can't imagine the network has liked that for some time.
And that's where it's been headed. And the ratings have been headed that way. Right. So that's kind of what's going on. And people talking about the cancel stuff. So we had the Don Cherry thing happen here in Canada. A lot of people were very upset about it. But ultimately, and, you know, Mike, you and I have worked in media for years. These are people who are being paid a lot at a time when the economics of their industry is collapsing and changing. Mm-hmm. So anytime you can get out of a high paying contract, you're getting out of it. So it's almost an opportunity, like, fine, let's fire Kimmel because, you know, maybe we can. I don't know what's in his contract, but they probably don't have to pay him out as much.
I don't disagree.
Because of now, compared to if they just wanted to fire him on any random day. So it's probably like a happy accident for ABC to get out of this.
Or another question, is it planned? Did they negotiate this out before, and this is just the, you know, they're looking for the exit point, you know, they had already made and so this was the exit point. So I'm super curious. So this is where we got to follow the ball, and sorry, I'm turning into a conspiracy.
Go, let's follow the ball.
You just pointed out at the beginning that people have a whole bunch of conspiracies about this. So
I'm super curious where he ends up. Well, so where does he end up now? Does he end up with his own podcast? Does he end up, you know, on working with Howard Stern on, you know, and Sirius somewhere?
Well, I'd be happy to take a bet right now. My bet is on he gets a deal with Spotify or Apple for huge money to do his podcast or a version of his show.
And one interesting thing with Charlie Kirk is he was super, super popular and loved by millions of people. And then many other millions of people had never heard of him before. And that's only possible in today's era. Because back in the day, you know, they said the most watched thing ever was the series finale of MASH. And they only had three stations. So even if you didn't even like MASH, you have to watch it because it was the only thing on. Now you go to where your audience is. So I think Jimmy Kimmel will make more money being more obscure and less mainstream, but with a more diehard audience.
Well, look at Candace Owens. I mean, she's gone from, you know, somewhat edgy to full on extreme. I mean, she's pointing at the Macron family like they have different genitals.
What station is that? Is it just her own YouTube channel? Or I don't even know how that works.
Absolutely massive on her own channel, on her own website, on all of the platforms, including YouTube. She's blown up. Tucker Carlson's another
richer
one.
Richer than ever, too.
Oh, yeah. She's making,
I'm guessing,
huge money. She's being sued by the Macrons. She's got her own story that she can follow. She was a friend of Charlie Kirk. She arrived fired at the right time. Tucker Carlson.
Fired at the right time. Yeah, yeah. What a phrase.
Yeah.
Oh, same. Tucker Carlson, right? We listened to. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you mentioned Charlie Kirk. You know, also another group were the anti, right? Quite frankly. So, you know, the stats always show that the people who don't like you listen twice as longer as the people who do like you.
That was the Howard Stern formula.
Yeah, the Howard Stern formula. So he had that was his kind of campus following, right? He'd have those who disagree with me come to the front. And quite frankly, that kind of is what made his podcast so popular amongst a lot of people. And
But to your original point, is that where we're going? Where face-to-face intensive debate is what we're going to do. I mean, I've gone down the rabbit hole a few times trying to get a better understanding of who this guy was as a youth and as he was becoming a man and a dad. And I watched this guy that enjoyed the challenge, more than I think he enjoyed the mission or cause that he was behind. He seemed to really love the debate element of it. And the one thing that I think was to his detriment, and I'm sorry to say this because I will get backlash, is that he had that intensive arrogance of debate that people are not accustomed to. People want to have
Canada. In Canada.
That is true. Yeah. In America, a completely different thing.
Oh, yeah.
But Canadians, good point, Anthony. Canadians' reaction to this guy is that he's rude and abrasive. I mean, the people that don't like him, on the basis of that he's rude and abrasive and only his opinion counted. And if you looked at it from that context, it would be easy to draw that conclusion.
The America is just more abrasive in general. Like you, MSNBC left-wing show, like, you know, Rachel Maddow, she is rude and abrasive. Like we don't have that in our left-wing media here in Canada either. It's a different strain. One thing I want to put to you guys, speaking about the cancel culture component, is there was a lot of like the big studios were really enforcing the other agenda for a long time in interesting ways. There's this sitcom Last Man Standing, Tim Allen show, which I had never even heard of it for years when it was the number one rated sitcom in America, just because I don't know. I had like, they don't really draw attention to it in the mainstream. It was suddenly fired. It was suddenly canceled. And Tim Allen would go on podcast going, I don't know. It was the best ratings ever. And he theorized that it was because it showed a conservative patriarch, a conservative father of a household in a positive light in a way that he hadn't seen since Home Improvement, like in the 90s and so forth. So he's canned there. And then the Roseanne show that makes a comeback, the very first episode of that show, because I had just gotten into Roseanne watching reruns. I was like, this is a really great show and really showing like the challenges of everyday life for people. And that had won awards for dealing with very complicated, you know, racial issues. Mm-hmm. It won awards for gay and lesbian acceptance because they would show gay and lesbian people in like a positive, you know, complicated human light in the early 90s when that wasn't happening. So very like developed, comprehensive show. First episode of the reboot, which came out like, I don't know, 2018 or whenever it was, she's wearing the MAGA hat or MAGA shirt or hat or whatnot. And she's in her house and her sister, Jackie, and remember the whole show is kind of almost about their tension. Her sister comes and she's wearing one of those Hillary Clinton pink hats that they call it the pussy hat. She's wearing that hat and there's no words in the scene. They just walk in and right away the audience get it. Yeah. And you laugh already. And you find out they haven't spoken in 4 years over this, over their division on this. And then the opening scene, they go, we got to put this behind us. This is silly. We're sisters. And they were like America's.
What an excellent example of what needs to happen.
An amazing, it's a really powerful opening scene.
Right.
So, of course, what happens 4 episodes later, they go, we got to cancel this show.
Cancel.
Yeah. No, because Roseanne posted some racist comment on Twitter, you know, dumb thing that I don't want to relitigate that. But you could have given her a pass and said, you know, don't be mean, Roseanne, but here's an important show. And instead, they said, we got to take this off the air. I think a lot of people culturally in the U.S. are saying, you suppressed our meaningful conversations for 20 years in the name of your agenda. Go ahead and fire Kimmel. We don't care. Call it what you want, but we feel like we need a rebalancing here. So my question to you guys is this a rebalancing? Because I feel like in many ways it is.
Is it balancing or is it going the wrong way?
It's anywhere near because we haven't seen Roseanne type shows being canceled yet. But does it lead it that way?
Yeah.
Well, what we do with that ball in the pendulum is we throw it as far each way as we can. Human nature just seems to do that. I think in answer to your question, this is a leveling of the playing field in a lot of ways. And we're seeing it in other places where people that were canceled are making great comebacks. Shane Gillis is the biggest comedian on earth. Saturday Night Live took a pass on him for a racist joke or an accent that he did, I think, on a podcast several years before it was brought up by the cancel culture that he should not have a job and he should not be a funny man. He then proceeded to be the biggest comedian in America. And I've also heard, and maybe you guys have heard this too, that the entertainment up against cancel culture, the entertainment industry has lost billions, hundreds of billions of dollars trying to create content for what is a woke cancel culture that's not interested in that content at all. And they've lost hundreds of billions doing it. And I think we're going to see the shift in entertainment and news and all of these things where those virtues and virtue signaling disappear.
So our politics definitely, you know, we know that our politics influences our entertainment and definitely our communication, right? So yeah. it seems to be, and quite frankly, that's more and more as we see these shifts happen. The hearing.
Yeah, that
Do
was
talk about that we were talking
remarkable.
About. That did this week? Did anyone with Cash Patel the? Did you watch the hearing?
An FBI hearing?
Yeah, it was.
No. Like about the Charlie Kirk killing?
Yeah, it was WWE. I mean, everything except for chairs being thrown.
I didn't tune in.
Oh, my goodness.
Drama?
Yeah. Some of the comments to the Congress and to the Senate, terrible notes from Cash Patel about how he's been treated. Names being thrown back and forth. People being told that their careers are a joke, that they're an abomination to America. There was no decorum in that discussion at all. And this is the leading policing force in America.
Yeah.
And their oversight. And all they did was scream and yell at each other and throw horrible comments and accusations for 2 days.
Yeah, it was awful. Both sides, it just was inappropriate. And quite frankly, they should probably apologize.
I would agree.
To the public. So that should just be, listen, we need to if for such a tragic event to do that was just terrible, right? And it came off bad, you know, both sides screaming, you know, insults at each other for
zero credibility left on either side leading that hearing.
And, you know, I heard about that. It's funny, as I was moving around this week, I think they think sometimes they do these hearings and people aren't watching. People were talking about it all week. They're like, holy cow. Like, what's going on? And, you know, we saw our own in Canada. We saw our own house sit this week, right? And I mentioned on another show, we spent the first, you know, part of the week just insulting each other. So, you know, now a little more decorum, you know, we're not as rough with the way we're doing it. But we spent the first part of the week just, you know, not very solution driven, not very, you know, process procedure. Let's get moving on. Let's get to an outcome. And that's too bad because I think, you know, that leadership sets the tone for what those things are. And so when we go on these political witch hunts where we're tracking down parties to, you know, get them off air or do things because that's not our political view, that's what it leads to, right? And quite frankly, that comes from that dialogue and that decorum. It becomes accepted within their own community, which is the political community. And then they take it out into other industries. And quite frankly, that's just inappropriate. And, you know, and the public should be saying no. You know, I think Americans, definitely Canadians.
I think the public's saying yes. I think people, because if you're saying it's like wrestling, then people like it. So they want the drama. Or to your point about the hate watching or hate listening, maybe they want to say it's unacceptable conduct, but they still want to watch it so then they can judge it.
Because here's the thing, Anthony, which I'm trying
to figure. That's a good point.
I'm trying to figure out in my mind. Have they lost so much credibility that people want them to be buffoons now? So a little bit of that is we have to be careful about, because if people, you know, we start off the show with they've lost faith in basically believing what they're told. So then are they just kind of, is it a little bit of they're goofing on them now? So they just want them to beat each other up or make, you know, attack each other.
Well, people will not love that for long. I mean, if you really think that that's what the people want, well, I'll tell you something else about wrestling, and anybody who's watched it or followed it over the years, it does this with popularity more than any other entertainment I've ever seen.
So true.
So I wonder if we will tire of that quickly. And I have to ask you guys a question because it has been on my mind. You know, I think of Charlie Kirk, and by the way, the shock and trauma that millions of people simultaneously experienced over a couple of days, hundreds of millions of people just with the witness of that thing, I think, first of all, leads to difficult discussion between either side right now. And the other thing that occurred to me was, you know, Charlie Kirk and the people that would argue with him from the other side, they argued. I think this, you think that. I think this, you think that. I refute that, I refute that. I have data on this, I have data on that.
Right.
And what I took away after watching a lot of it was, sadly, it had no meaning. It had some awareness meaning. It had some power of, it had great energy for creating a movement of youth to take a political stance to change things.
What he was doing had no meaning?
What he was doing had little caloric value in the end, because
I think all those supporters would disagree.
I know, and I'm going to take heat for this, but I would ask you to hear this end of it. It's an argument. When you have a point and I have a point, and it's we can't get past it based on your stats and my stats, and
that's not what he was doing. Let's be honest. He was converting young people to conservatism, and he was succeeding. And I don't know if that's why that person killed him, but that's why people wanted his voice silenced. Yeah. Because young people are the future, and young people have predominantly been voting left and skewing things, although it's all a wash in Canada because the baby boomers voted for Carney, and young people are getting more conservative. But I think he's, from what I know, like I don't have
the in-depth following
of his comments that other people do, but I think he's been immensely successful. And that's why a lot of older people had never heard of him before, because he was just speaking to young people, but he was converting them.
Yeah.
And that was the breeding ground for the left for decades, for like 40, 50 years. And that's why he did what he did. That was Turning Point USA. We're at the turning point. We're going to turn things around. The university campuses won't be won't be left wing anymore. They'll be right wing.
Yeah.
And he was succeeding.
No, and by the way, I wish I didn't use Charlie Kirk as an example here now, because you're right. And I don't mean to.
It's okay. We can fight it out. We can disagree.
I don't disagree with you on those points at all. But what my point was, based on this dynamic of communication that is happening, that's creating more polarity. I wonder if the next Charlie Kirk that we see, conservative or liberal, will rise up on the basis of not confronting in a debate fashion, but trying to do something that is more cohesive to find a solution between two points. And I don't know that I saw much of that in reviewing the footage. As you point out, I'm a boomer, and maybe I just...
No, but I think you're right. I don't. The whole point was not, we're going to talk things out and then meet in the middle. The whole point was, we're going to talk things out, and I'm going to convert you to being a conservative at the end.
Yeah.
But he's just saying, I want to talk. I want to talk to liberals and try and flip you, rather than just only talk to a small conservative audience.
But
what we're both saying is 100% right. They're not contradictory things.
To that end, his representation of what is conservatism to that youth, to that demographic overall, was going to be a very different sounding, very different dynamic than historically, based on them joining with that tone in mind, with that fervor in mind. So it was going to be a different conservative party. Let me ask you a question. This is very difficult. Charlie Kirk, the bullet misses Charlie Kirk. What happens moving forward in his life, in your estimation?
Oh,
he keeps on going.
He keeps on going. You know, and you know, I thought about this because it's interesting, because, you know, the president, you know, Trump, he same thing, but it grazed his ear and he kept going and he became the president, right? And I thought, you know, what does that mean? You know, if by chance, and I wish it had, if it just grazed him, you know, would it have been something that would have moved him forward and escalated him? You know, I think his views were a little too, you know, far to the one side, you know, too erratic, to go much further than maybe, you know, a very powerful conservative. And probably politics wouldn't have been the outcome. But, I think, you know, I wish that would have happened, of course. Yeah. I think we all do.
Of course,
But really, I think at the end of the day, he would have been a strong conservative and a strong supporter and always been very key in the party if that had happened. I think he always will be, you know, definitely talked about, felt within the party. You know, I wanted to just and hit on the other point you had earlier. You know, I think he filled a void, right? And I think what we learned from taking away from someone who created a movement based on a void of people, and we learn things, right? Because we watch how they do it and we watch who follows, and for whatever reason, whether it's religious, you know, whether it's Christianity or evangelistic, you know, that's one thing. But I think we all learn things. And one thing I think we've learned from that is, to your point, Mike, you're trying to make, you know, sometimes if you debate and you statistically debate, so you sit down and you actually analytically go through why things are the way they are, you might be able to come to a better outcome. And I think some of that dialogue, I noticed, you know, and I do notice quite a bit, and I talk to you about it quite a bit, a lot of these debates that go on are, you know, just two groups with an opinion raging at each other.
Yeah.
Whereas, quite frankly, I wish people, you know, and we're trying to do this more on True Patriot Love. We're trying to come from a basis of the analytics and the stats of where we are. So we're trying to look at it and say, okay, crime rates are this, you know, homelessness is this. And we're trying to like break it down by the numbers and then work it back.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to debate something when you see, you know, when you look at the numbers and you look at the outcomes and you say to yourself, that's where we're starting from. You know, there's some things, you know, whether it be birth rates or whatever, you know, concern, right? And I think the way you talk about that and what's happening in the country, you can address those. You don't have to get into the, whether it's a feminist issue or whatever. You can get into that issue and you can talk about it because the birth rates show the stats, right? So you don't have to, you can talk about that intelligently.
No, and say, I mean, you're right. And things that Charlie Kirk would touch on, like the role of mothers and how we've let that go, that is he's statistically 100% correct. If we don't have moms having babies, the population goes down. If, you know, so, you know, I did, and I don't want to come off like, I didn't like that argumentative thing because I found it more informative than anything. That's the truth. That I would, in those moments, I'd see the liberal side of it louder than normally I would. And I'd hear his side very decisive and very completely thought through better than I would hear the right do it.
Right.
And that I will certainly miss. And I think that that void is now open again.
Right. It is open again, but quite frankly, how we do it, I think is left for us to, that's still in our hands, right?
Yeah.
So how we debate and how we come to the conclusion of those debates is key. That's definitely not the way to do it. In Canada, I think we're still in a good place. I think we still are having active debates, quite frankly. You know, Anthony and I were talking before. I think we have to look at things, break things down a little more from the right and the left a little more, because traditionally we've been kind of in the middle or to the left. And quite frankly, we haven't looked at all the options. And I think, you know, the more we do this and the more we have these conversations, we're going to start to do that. Right. So, you know, and hopefully that dialogue will get out, we'll do more of it. But, you know, we learned, right. And we learned from this happening, a bad event, a bad outcome. We learned, quite frankly, what we don't want to do. And we don't want to have debates that polarize people so much so that you have someone that wants to harm another person.
Right? We cannot shoot at good quality humans trying to make a difference. Simply put, that's it. He was a clean living Christian guy, as best I can understand, with a beautiful young family. Many people around him that supported him. An amazing media company built up. We have got to protect that freedom of speech. We have to protect the people who are willing to go out there and say things that make a difference, whether you agree or disagree at the first blush. And that's the thing that I took away, and I think everybody does, is that was a bullet through freedom of speech in a lot of ways, even though it was delivered by a citizen, allegedly.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of how I feel about it. Now, there is one question I do have. Where's your brown jacket? Like, do you want to be in the club? Okay, that was a fashion accident. You know, and I do appreciate the discussion on how we're going to discuss things moving forward as a society, how we're going to communicate. If this is a turning point, I hope that it actually brings us closer and doesn't create more of a polarity. I just don't see there's any room at either end anymore. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's my job to wrap. I need to give it to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. For Anthony Fury, Paul McCucci, myself, Mike Wixon, thanks for joining us for this round table. Please love, hate, comment. Oh, I can't wait to see the comments on this one. And we'll catch you next time. Tell your friends about TPL Media. Thanks.